They're my special advisor, but at the same time.
My special advisor is Lefty, who's going to deal with the health sector. Amongst us also is a very brand new HOT from the Northern Cape. We wish him well in his appointment. He's been with the sector. He's from the National Department of Health. And therefore, we wish him well in his new responsibility. No, no, that's a responsibility. It's not a promotion, it's a huge one. He's got his own empire. He's got his own empire now in the Northern Cape. So, welcome. And the congratulations. Of course, you members know what the situation is in the Northern Cape. And so the appointment came at the most opportune time. Let's allow then the subletter to take us through in 10 minutes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members. The introduction will be very fairly brief. I'll give the presentation within 10 minutes. I think most members have already been through the IGFR, so this is really intended to remind them and introduce the session. The first slide speaks to the spending outcomes for 2006-07, and the position we see at the end of the last financial year really is at least 5 health departments being fairly substantially under pressure and overspending. So if we look at these numbers, particularly the fourth column called over or underspending, we see Free State overspending by 92 million, Gauteng by 366 million, Limpopo by 278 million, Northern Cape by 91 million. So pretty substantial pressure in those provinces, and our provincial visits to them recently showed that a lot of them are busy with downsizing, something that we also would like to address again in the coming budget. At the same time, however, we do see underspending in some provinces, most notably Northwest, 137 million, and Eastern Cape, 80 million. But overall, in that bottom right-hand corner, 13.9% year-on-year spending growth, so strong growth in health spending. On the next slide, we see those spending trends over the 6 to 7 years by a functional area within the health system. And in that bottom right-hand corner again, we see 6.7% annual real growth over the annual, so every year of the period from 2003-04 to 2009-10. 6.7% real growth is quite strong. And comparing internationally, that's a pretty healthy growth in health sector funding. But if we look across these functional areas, we see fairly variable growth, very strong growth in HIV/AIDS spending, health facilities, 13.8%, emergency medical services and so on, but much slower growth, for example, in hospital services, although that's the first time now we're starting to see some growth, real growth is averaging 4% in hospital services. So just looking at that overall trend, by 2009-10, total health expenditure will be almost double that in nominal terms of 2003-04. Strong growth in the functional areas, particularly HIV/AIDS. Some growth in hospital budgets, 4% real. And between 2003-04 and 2009-10, real growth will exceed 8% annually, which is very strong growth in Northern Cape, Mpumalanga, Northwest, and Limpopo. So overall, we have a lot of pressure on overspending. There's still a little bit of underspending on traditional grants, particularly the first year of the forensic pathology grant, where there was 270 million underspending. So the grant took, and it took longer to get that function shift implemented, and we had to deal with that now even in the rollover processes, and still a bit of underspending on the revitalization grant. Coming on to primary health care, we can see this is a program that consistently has very strong growth. We see growth going in nominal terms up from 6.4 billion to 13.4 billion over the end of the period, which is real growth of 8% annually. So very strong continuing upwards spending growth in primary health care. and my friend Ken is spending double that of 2014. He's spending over 13 billion on primary healthcare annually by the out year. Coming to the primary healthcare output, however, these teams have leveled off over the past year or two, around about 101, 102 million houses. So those spending growth in primary healthcare is increasing. We're not seeing much signs of output increasing. I can see that some of the numbers there look a bit strange, like on POPO's average cost per visit. There's probably something wrong in their data there. And provinces are still averaging around 2.5, 2.6 visits per capita below the target of 3 visits. Supervision rates at primary healthcare are still low in some provinces. This shows health districts with particularly low expenditure. The National Department wants each health district to spend at least 300 rand per year per capita on primary health expenditure, and this shows those which are below 200 rand. The lowest districts being Mr. Deng, Siyanda, and Great Sekukune in those provinces. The next slide is for emergency medical services expenditure, and again, this is going very strongly from 1.2 billion to 3.2 billion. 17.7% annually in the first in the historic period, and 7.7% in the period going forward. I won't go through all the reasons for that growth in the EMS budget, but there's a lot of planning around that. Aid spending, as we're well aware, has also grown extremely strongly. The numbers are shown here. At this time we reported there were 264,000 patients on ARV treatment. That's currently risen above 300,000. Still some weaknesses, however, in the HIV and TB performance indicators. TB cure rates were very low in certain provinces. Their figures here are 27% cure rate for TB in KwaZulu-Natal, 31% in Mpumalanga. Some problems in nivperidone uptake, and quite low condom distribution rates in several provinces. Hospital funding is, as I mentioned previously, is starting to grow, averaging 4%. But it's particularly worrisome in the central hospitals. If I note there, a 0.8% real growth over the 6-year period, and there's a lot of pressure in the central hospitals, and this has to pay some attention to the issue of central hospitals, suggesting this is an area that needs work. In fact, the last point on the slide suggests that there's a continuous cycle of under-budgeting and over-expenditure in central hospitals. Coming towards the end now, some health professional numbers. The chapter looks at health, at numbers of health professionals in the health sector. It shows a growth of 24,000 health professionals over the period that this table covers. So I won't go through the details per category here. Those are the professional numbers. If you look at all the staff numbers, there's been an increase in the health sector, 51,000 health staff over the past few years. So this is a positive feature in the health sector. The sector has been able to pick up personnel numbers over the past 3 years. And there's strong forward growth in health compensation in the next 3 years, which is both growth in personnel numbers and the new wage compensation for nurses. In conclusion, health budgets are growing quite strongly. There was a 13.9% nominal growth in 06-07, particularly strong growth in HIV/AIDS, in TB, primary health care, emergency services, and infrastructure. Human resources strategy is beginning to bear fruit with gains visible in numbers of personnel, numbers of persons with AIDS treatment, shorter ambulance response times, and many facilities undergoing capital improvements. But we're still not seeing the improvements in health outcomes that we would like to see linked to these budget growth. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Dr. Plachin. Mr. Mellor. It's you now. Confirm or dispute what we've just said. Confirm or dispute what they just said.
We just dispute the numbers. However, we have a different interpretation of the data. So we can see, get our presentation on this.
I'm not sure if it's where it's being loaded here. Okay.
Honorable Chair and members, firstly, we are using, and if we can look at slide number 2 on the hard copy, we are using the chapter 3 as the base document for our presentation, and we do not contest the data concerns contained in the document. However, we have a different interpretation of what's happening. If we look at slide number 3, we can see the health spending as a percentage of national GDP. The interesting point here is the downturn that we see in the private health spending, which is this middle line in the graph. The bottom line is the public health spending, and that's the concern there is that it's bending down somewhat towards the latter side of the curve. But we'll come to that, and hopefully we can correct that over the time that's still available. The increase in health spending over and above the baseline, it needs to fund an increase in the demand of health services, which emanates from the birth of disease, which in turn emanates from the HIV and AIDS and TB epidemics and crises in the country. The increased cost of health services due to inflation, and then the catch-up, which comes from the fact that our facilities are not safe in the correct places, and that invoice particularly in disadvantaged provinces. Now, if we go to the next slide, slide number 5, that gives an indication of where we sit when we compare South Africa as a country with other countries. South Africa is about 6 or 7 from the top. We spend 3.5% the health expenditure is 3.5% of the GDP, which is more or less average. However, it's a bit disconcerting to see that Botswana, Argentina, we may beat them at rugby, but they still spend more money than us on health for the public sector. And Brazil beats us in terms of amount of money being spent on this. If we go to the far right-hand column, we see that in terms of total health expenditure as a percentage of GDP, we sit at 8.6, which is a lot better. In fact, it's third if you rank these by figure. And that gives us an indication why it is that, or it gives an indication of the disparity between health services in the public sector and the private sector. We have 3.5% of the GDP, which services 37 million people, and we've got 5% of the GDP, which services 7 million, which then adds up to the approximately 8.6 today. That gives us an indication of why we have the jump up in terms of the total expenditure. If we move to slide number 7, this is the slide that our colleagues from Treasury also highlighted. We maintain that the four provinces that definitely show overrun. But this is artificial, because provinces engineer their expenditures in such a way as to come out in budget because of the onerous clauses in the PFMA. Clause 7.
Which provinces are those four?
The four that overspent is Free State, Gauteng, Limpopo, and Northern Cape. Now, we say there are in fact other more provinces that overspent technically because they withheld expenditures and they carry the expenditures forward into the next year. I don't want I don't exactly know. The CFOs are here. You can ask them the questions. So I'm not going to.
No, we do want to know. We want you have said it. We want to know which provinces have technically done this thing. We want to know. You've raised it. If you don't have the information, we'll give you about 5 minutes after our presentation to get it. Proceed.
Thank you. The growth overrun. If you just take the overrun, it adds up to 736. The 379 indicated is a netting off exercise. So the overrun is in fact closer to a billion. Now it's interesting to bear in mind, and you'll hear this quite a few times, when you look at the Free State and Gauteng specifically, and perhaps to a lesser extent KwaZulu and Western Cape. The reason for the overspend is basically that the demand of health services overstrips the availability of growth. And this is particularly true in places where budgets in provinces like Gauteng and Free State have slowed, and I'll indicate that in a later slide as well. The reason for under-expenditure is in some cases provinces have problems to fill posts, and then secondly the capex, which is slow, particularly in the mortuary program or the coronary services. The conditional grant spending has improved quite significantly, and in previous reports, particularly in the press releases, we've seen that the health capital expenditure has grown quite significantly. As indicated by Treasury, the forensic pathology service showed underspending, and that is normal when we start a program. The spending for the National Tertiary Services, the Health Professionals Training Grant, and Comprehensive and AIDS Plan is more or less on budget. The only problem being in the capital side, being the revitalization and the forensic pathology services. If we look at slide number 12, if we look at the bottom section of the slide, and where we see the annual growth rate, the average growth rate from 2004 to 2007, the average for the country was 13.2%. Now, 13.2 can then be seen as more or less the benchmark. The provinces that were below that was Free State at 11% and Gauteng. And then also Western Cape, KwaZulu just on the bottom line, 13.1. The provinces that showed overspend or high growth rate are Limpopo, Northern Cape, and Northwest. If we look at the second column, which is the growth from 2008 to 2010, it's disappointing to note that the average growth rate dropped down to 9.6, which we would have seen higher because that indicates a drop from the 13.2. Again, there we see a different pattern. Growth for Western Cape is, Eastern Cape is low, Free State picks up somewhat, but Gauteng still stays below the average, and KwaZulu drops below the average. Western Cape also sits below the average. So what we say about this is we have low allocations or growth in allocations to Free State and Gauteng, which leads to overruns. We have concerns in Limpopo, in Mpumalanga, Northern Cape and Northwest, in their capacity to spend. The growth for the sector for 2008-2010 is 9.6, which slows down. But then above all, if you look at the slide number 12, the growth is choppy, which makes planning and which makes the introduction of a seamless health system difficult from a national point of view. You have one province all of a sudden getting a lot of money, and the next province being allocated less money. Then we get to the point of the trends in health numbers. It is true that we have seen an increase in the number of professionals employed in the health sector. However, if we look at this, we need to look at the role of community service professionals. That comes back to doctors, the dentists, and now lately also the nurses. If we take that sector out of it, there's pretty little growth in terms of what we have. It's also the role of the foreign doctors, which we have and we've recruited in the rural areas. The growth over this period in personnel numbers is up by about 20%, yet the expenditure is up by 27%. So we're spending more money per health professional at this point in time, which may be a good thing or it may be a bad thing. We feel that from what's reported from provinces, that certain provinces are experiencing up to 40% vacancies in certain categories. So the demand is still there. The rural provinces also have problems in recruiting and keeping qualified staff in the rural areas of their provinces. Then we look at slide number 17. We indicated earlier on that there's a... we look at slide number 16. This is also a slide that National Treasury people commented on. It is true that the expenditure on health, on HIV and AIDS, and the comprehensive plan increased by 29%. But that indicates to you that addresses the burden of disease in the country. It doesn't address the normal day-to-day problems that we have in treating sick people. Also, we see the capital expenditure, the 13.8 growth, and then at the bottom, the foreigner service, the 27.5% growth. Those are specific interventions which leads from either a backlog in facilities, which we're catching up on, or alternatively, it comes from the burden of disease. It doesn't impact on the day-to-day health services that needs to be provided. It doesn't cater for appendixes that needs to be taken out, or broken arms from rugby playing boys or whatever. So, what we're saying is that the growth in the health budgets looks good at the 13.9%, which my colleague indicated. But if you take the figures and you dismantle them, you realize that the baseline health services are under pressure. If we look at the slide number 18, which is the hospital admissions, this is an interesting thing that we need to look at. In 2001, the figure was 3.5 billion. Million, and then it's dropped down to 3.4 or 3.5 if you want to round it up in 2006-07. Now, if you look at slide 19, we acknowledge that the admission peaked in 2001-02, and it's dropped down to 2006-07. Now, this is contrary to the experience we have in hospitals. Hospitals are overloaded. But it is also true that recently it's come to our attention that hospitals need to provide a more and higher level of care due to the fact that the patients are generally sicker. The other point that may be a problem is our own health information system, which is either not accurate or is not capturing the fact that we have, in fact, a bigger problem in our hospitals than what's indicated in the figure work. And to try and remedy this, we have included a bid for a health information system in the 2008 MTEC. The HIV and AIDS, we've talked about the delegated program, and again the figures are the same as indicated by the National Treasury. Again, it addresses the burden of disease. We've got then the mortality rates, and I don't want to, on slide 22, I'm not going to say much about that, just to say that these diseases emanate normally from communicable diseases such as malaria, TB, HIV and AIDS, non-communicable diseases such as hypertension and cancer, and then we have trauma and violence adding to the mortality rates. The speaker from Treasury also talked about the EMS services. If we look at slide number 25, we say it's a key health program for 2010. The growth has been good in provinces where EMS services were previously poorly funded. The next phase that we have, emergency medical services. The next phase is that we must make sure that the hospitals are able to handle patients when they arrive and they are being delivered by the EMS staff. The hospital revitalization program is funded at the present moment to be completed in a time horizon of 20 years. Now, the program has picked up quite a lot of speed and just recently, and we need to shorten this from a health perspective, and we've asked for additional funding for this. The slide number 27 is again a very interesting slide. In the previous discussion that I talked about, I said we need to look at the population growth and we need to look at inflation. Now, this table, in fact, tells us and takes care of population growth because it's a per capita answer that we get in the far right-hand column. And secondly, it's also a real growth, so inflation is being taken care of. So the norm is 5.3 for the country. But again, the honourable members will recall, I said I'll talk about Free State and Gauteng and to a lesser extent Western Cape, time after time. The growth in Free State and Gauteng and Western Cape are all slow, below the 5.3. Those are also the areas where we had an overspending. So the demand in health services generally outperforms or outstrips the availability of budgets. What I've just said is more or less sort of explained in slide 28. It can also be added that the provinces where tertiary services are being provided are in fact the Free State in Universitas, Gauteng and Joburg General and Tshwane and other hospitals, KwaZulu-Natal in Albert Luthuli and the Western Cape in their two hospitals, Groteskier and Tigerberg. They are also the ones that are under pressure. So, there's our comment made by Treasury concerning that tertiary services need attention. From a national perspective, we have a difficulty to provide a seamless national health service. We don't want a citizen from Northwest to walk across the boundary to Gauteng to get a better health service. The service must be seamless. But whilst we have an inequity of funding between provinces, we're going to have such things happening. If we have an unevenness in the growth of provincial allocations, we see a deterioration, or as indicated by my colleague from Treasury, a downsizing in certain provinces of health services, then that becomes problematic. We also see a problem when the growth drops below the inflation and population growth figures. From a general perspective, we further have problems with internal growth, population migrations. We also have a problem with external population migrations. And then we have problems with crises which sort of get appears in diseases which hurt our population, such as MDR and XDR TB. In general terms, we are of the opinion that the health, public health sector is underfunded. Thank you, Chair.
Well, it looks like you are correct. You have different interpretations. The very first one that jumps to my mind is slide 4. Coming from the health department, really, where you're saying that we've got a crisis in respect of HIV and AIDS and TB in the country. Clearly, that is a huge interpretation. And really coming from, is this accurate? Do we have a crisis earlier from where you sit at? I think it's something that we must come back to. And, right. There are many questions here. Questions? Comments? Clarity? Madam Robinson, how you've been itching for this one, I know.
Yes, Chair. I'm glad to have it publicly acknowledged that we have a crisis and that we are underfunded. Now, certainly we have a problem. And I want to speak particularly about the Western Cape and the Curtis Gere Hospital, which I have visited personally, and information which has been given to me. We know that there has been a cut in the number of beds. And we are told that this is the only way out. I just want us to appeal and to look at things and say, you can't just say we don't have enough staff, we don't have enough money, we must cut. It not only affects the people who need the operation, where small problems become acute, where instead of dealing with a hernia, for example, which it can be repaired, you leave it to go for so long because operations are postponed that the problem becomes far worse, and then you're dealing with the cancer. If one can deal with problems when they occur and not... Pardon? The vraag is, what can we do with the health? So it's different with health. I am concerned about, let me just go through here. You have mentioned that you want a new information service. I think that is fantastic, because one of the problems, I think, is that we don't have accurate information. We have tremendous in-migration. What you've said is great, that you want to provide the same service everywhere, but the fact is that it just doesn't exist. Also, just with reference to cutting down on the number of beds at a place like Curtis Gere, you're not only affecting the health of the people, you are also affecting the quality of the training of the doctors. And Curtis Gere is an important, and there are other training hospitals as well. But if there aren't enough operations taking place, your doctors are not getting the training that they need. They're not getting the experience. So we have to urgently ask for better funding. I mentioned that. I just want to talk about TB as well. Obviously, the surgery is something that I'm particularly concerned about, and the reduction in deaths. But TB is a major problem. You asked whether it was a crisis. And I think the problem is that with these new strains, the XDRs and the MDRs, there's not adequate provision for the specialized care that is needed for these people. People need to be taken into isolation. And if this is not happening because there's not adequate controls, because there aren't adequate facilities, more and more people are going back into the community and affecting other people. So my appeal generally is just, what can you do to make sure that there is adequate funding, and that for the Western Cape in particular, you've got to take account of the fact that people are pouring into this province from all over because of the services which are provided. And we can't be blind to that. I need to put that for the moment. Thank you.
I was touched by some certain things that relate to laws of development. In other words, the struggle of the opposite. In other words, as people are dying, new ones are born. So I don't think we should worry and think there's a big crisis in respect of that. Because that's a law of development. It would be boring if you have no people dying. I mean, living perpetually for 2,000 years, queer man.
No. No, thanks, Chef. Maybe you have just allowed another presentation to take place. But truly, I don't think we are addressing ourselves to the presentation that has been made in order for us really to propose what is supposed to take place. This is not good, sir, when you come to a committee meeting and then you want to play in some cheap politics. Because it is being reported, and I don't think the question that...
You may assist me with your own questions.
Yes. Oh, I just felt that I must make that particular.
I don't want to do politics and come straight to the point.
You see, Chair. Thank you. Because if you look at the page 4, there is money that is being allocated. The presenter gave the clear indication that the capacity of, specifically let me go to my province, the Northern Cape, about the money that they have, is their capacity, the capacity of spending that particular money. It means there is money, sir, which needs to be spent, which we need to use and do all those type of things. Which I want to ask a question that says, the question that has been posed about the capacity, what is the department doing in terms of that? And second, Chair, I don't think we must agree there is a crisis, because there is no crisis. Somebody has just said that there is a huge crisis. There is no crisis, and I don't want to be part and parcel of a meeting that says there is a crisis. There is no crisis, and if there is a crisis, let some other people come up with a plan that shows us what is it that we are supposed to do. Not to come and give us two statements, Chair. Thanks.
You are right. In fact, if you look at that, like that you refer to, the problem is that the member is bemoaning as an understanding of 57 million rand. Nobody has cut any money that's in the system of the Western Cape, as understand by 67, as at 31 March 2007. Mr. Robertson.
The Eastern Cape, if I can remember correctly, I have the document again, understand by 18 minutes. Now, Chair, my question is, we've got a shortage of trained staff in hospital. Now, especially in my province, and an example of that is the Dora Gilda Hospital, which has a shortage of 55% nursing staff. It's one nurse or sister to 90 patients. And the XDR TV at that same hospital, they have brought those patients into the Dora and Ginza, which is not suited for the TB diseases. And they put it right next door to the maternity ward. Now, Chair, on 18 million under expenditure, surely issues like this can be addressed. Thank you, Chair.
Well, there are people from the Eastern Cape who will respond to that.
Thank you, sir. Sir, mine one is two issues around slide number 19 and 29. On slide number 19, he said, you know, that are generally requiring more and a higher level of care. I think basically we see from the experience of our province, it's a question of resourcing the primary health care system. People would go to hospital because if you are not well resourcing your primary health care facilities, then they are bound to go to a higher level. Not necessarily that is their nature of illnesses that requires them to go there. Because if there is a primary health care that is well resourced, they would go there and access those medications from that level. The other one, sir, that I want also to point out here is on slide 29, the inequity in funding between provinces. I think the officials of the department can quantify the cost of backlog from the disadvantaged provinces as case that with the current funding, we'll never be able to address those backlogs, because whilst you are getting your current funding, whilst you have to address your current needs and situation, but also some of the money has to catch up with the backlog, which even your look at your FEC, on your FEC funding, it's not addressing those backlogs in terms of the health facilities in the province. So I'm saying we need to be strong around those issues. Thank you.
Chair, I'm going to quote what you always say to us. They've been given 2 cents. What have they done with it? There's 80 million rand lying. And Chair, what I also forgot to mention about the Eastern Cape is that my hospitals in Barkley East and Lady Grey in Central Kusamba have to use their own transport to fetch medicines from the depot in Port Elizabeth, because the Eastern Cape Health Department has not paid the people who do the transport of medicine to outreaches in the province. Thank you, Chair.
Let me just say, in my ruling, I want to plead with you to look at the presentation before you make your submission. Because you can't just speak as if you're thumb-sucking. I mean, whatever the problems are for them, if you're talking Eastern Cape now, we're looking at that 80 million underspend. And we know that the MEC is forever bleeding poverty. Mm-hmm. And I think Mr. Robertson is right, because we are saying the needs are 20 rand. People are given 2 cents, and they're not able to handle the 2 cents. In fact, what Mr. Huyeman was saying, if you look at the last slide, where it is said that there are capacity problems, and I think that's the issue we must be talking to. What money is available? And I think members of a committee and members of a legislature should not be champions and speak on behalf of the department and the session, whether it's government is over our understanding by the way. So I'm saying, for now, Western Cape, I see no justification for people to moan the cut of budget. I want people to show me what I see in front of me here, 57 million understanding. Eastern Cape, I see 80 million understand. And so, all right, let me hear Mr. Sogoni.
Now, Chairperson, I think that I agree with yourself and Thomas Tema. I think that there are challenges. Also, I mean, the question of people spending the 2 cents that they are given is an issue. However, Chair, the The other question that was raised, maybe before I go to that, let me just take the minute further. There are now 316 ARV sites in the country, which is a growth, I don't know from how much, but it's a step in the right direction. But with the current, I mean, we have transplanted out of, I think that 249,000 people that have got HIV and AIDS or TB. But is this what you call the number? What is the department doing with this number? Is this department intending to grow this number in order to be able to reach everyone? But also the problem also that was raised is the cure rate with TB. Did you say 72%? I think it was 72%. But why are we, I mean, TB is a curable disease. And I think that looking at the amount that are spent, there's lack of growth on that amount. But where is our problem? Why are we still the beauty, the curing of what we call a TB is not higher than the 72%. The other question, Chef, I think some other questions have been raised about the variances between the provinces. Is the contradiction between growth in budget and services that was raised? Why is that the case? Are we not employing more qualified people? What is the problem? I think that it was raised with regard to one of the sites was like 16, but it was not the only one where this issue was raised. But also, Chairperson, I mean, if at this level, it's manager, senior manager of the health, the idea, the complaining about information, for example, from our hospitals not coming by, it's us. Where else are you going to? What is it that we're doing to deal with this problem? So that the information that comes from our health system is as accurate as possible. I think that there's something that can be done. Not just that there's nothing that can be done, but what is it that we're not doing? The other issue that was raised, was not raised. We're getting a general, what you call a number of the staff in emergency medical services. But we do know that there are provinces that have got serious problems of searching around your paramedics, for instance, and those kinds of things. I'm not sure whether that question is we'll respond to it for provinces who have to respond, but there are provinces that have problems of subsurfing. And I think that from the last report that we had, there was a report, and I think that the minister also announced that now the Department of Health for hospitals were going to undertake training of what we call staff. Is that happening? Is it bearing fruit? Or when are we expecting it to bear fruit? I know that there has been, at one stage or another, training was only done by
private process, so they're services. And, Chairperson, I'll stop there because I think that you have raised the issue of understanding, but I'll come back to
something. Slide number 12 of the presentation by National Health. My listening and my reflection on those speakers say one of the provinces that were below the benchmark of the growth of their budget is Western Cape. So was Eastern Cape, Free State, and Gauteng. So, Chair, from those provinces, I don't think it will be really responsible of them to complain of underfunding, while their own budget growth, baseline growth, is below the national benchmark. So before we entertain any underfunding or shortages of facilities, they've got to look at their own budgeting, their budget growth. I'll be asked, Chair, whether my kind of assessment is up to scratch. Chair, slide number 19. Here we're told that the hospital admission peaked for that period. But then almost recently, a year ago, they dropped again. But contrary to the assertion that hospitals are generally overloaded, Chair, can we be advised why they drop in admission while at the same time complaining of these facilities being overloaded? What happened to this more additional people who were coming to the hospital, to this hospital? Were they sent back home without treatment? What happened? Because they say here, generally there's an overload on the system. There was a growth, but suddenly a drop in the admission. What was happening? I'll stop here for now, Chair. Thank you.
Chair, is it his concern where these stats come from? But secondly, Chair, and I said it last year, and I'm going to say it again this year until maybe we get some of the action from the department, is, Chair, when somebody's sick, doesn't matter where they come from, you don't turn them away. But as we can see on the presentations given to us, there are serious budget constraints, especially provinces overspending, and they're asking for more money. But, Chair, what does concern me is people from neighboring countries come to hospitals, especially the Free State and the Eastern Cape, and that eats out of our budget for our people. And in my constituency, I questioned this again 2 weeks ago, and it hasn't improved. People are still coming over from the city to hospitals on that border area. Thank you.
But still, the understanding remains.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. All right, let's say, I think the first thing that we must deal with here is, where does this National Treasury's overspending of 379 million, National Department 736, now, which is which? On the same page there, cross overrun of 736 million versus that. But number two, the same page, National Department says there is artificial this thing because provinces engineer expenditure by carrying it forward because of the draconian clauses of the GFMA. Firstly, which are these draconian clauses of the GFMA? I think I want to know those. because we enacted the DFMA ourselves, and the intention was not to create draconian clauses or laws. So what, which are those draconian clauses? We might want to have a look at them, and with the view of amending, if you like. I'm talking slide 8 on page 4, National Department presentation. Number 2, how does this engineering manifest itself? And which are these provinces that are engineering these expenditures? We do want to know. And what is this national department doing about this thing? And of course, what are the implications here? And in which areas are they engineering? A matter that we need to resolve. Page 5, there is a demand for health services that is outstripping availability of function, particularly in housing and the Free State, where allocations have grown slowly. The Free State must comment here. I'm not sure where the housing is here, I've not seen that. I've seen the MEC of interest. But then, going back to the Free State, there's a huge overspending of 92 million. What is the reason for that? What have been done to address those problems in the Free State going into this current financial year? What are the risks that we might see in the current financial year? Something has been done, therefore, to address the problem that relates to that 92 million overspend. The Northwest, I suspect, is here, I think. Yeah. Northwest, you also are in the ICU for some time, underspending of 137 million. What's going on here? What are you doing about this thing? Although personnel numbers are up, provinces report vacancy rates of up to 40% in certain categories. Which provinces are those? And what categories are we talking about? Growth in numbers recruited of 20% over the period, and yet spending increases by 27% over the same period. Is there value for money here? That goes to the National Department. And a high growth provinces, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest. Again, I mean, why would there be growth? High growth, especially in provinces like the Northwest, for instance, that are in that problem we raise. But then, if that is the case, is the visibility in terms of the outcome, the value for money here, and what is the quality of spending like? In, especially Northwest, they can comment. KZN, are they here? KZN, no. Well, the legislature would not be able to comment here, unfortunately. I know they are here. They can't comment. Yeah, no. Limpopo, I don't see anybody from Limpopo. Mpumalanga, I'm told they're on their way. Right. Now, on the very last page, we are told that there's inequity in funding between provinces. Who's responsible for this? Uneven growth in provincial allocations. Who's responsible for this? Allocations dropping below inflation and population. Who is again responsible for this? And what is being done to address this problem? All right. Let me then allow me National Treasury first to come in terms of the 379 versus the 600 and what. Dr. Fletcher or any one of you there can respond.
Yeah, okay, I'll respond very quickly. Let me just try and check the slide. Which is in the health presentation is on page 4. Yeah. No, what? And this is something that our minister actually raised with us. What we need to do in analyzing some of the data, we mustn't add up, because when you add up, it doesn't reflect the proper understanding and overspending. So what you will have is if you add up Free State, you add Gauteng, and you add Limpopo, and you add the Northern Cape, you get to the number that that health actually showed us. So the overspending. I'm talking to page 4, slide number 7. Oh, sorry. Of the National Health Department one. So if you add up the 92, 366, 278, and the 91, you probably get close to 700 or so million or more that the Department of Health is talking about. So if you then subtract the underspending, then the net effect of both is the 379 million.
The National Department of Health, you have a whole range of questions.
Yes, thank you very much. I'm Jürgen Pelle from the National Department of Health. I'll try to answer as many of the questions as I can, in the order in which they were asked. Just some preliminary comments, though. I think it's very clear from both presentations that we're not looking at a homogeneous situation. There's a lot of variation. I'm coming to that. So there's a lot of variation. If you just take, for example, on the input side.
Let me check something. Are we talking about two different departments here, or one department, health? And this is exactly why, the question is, why do we have to have variation? Are our sources of information the same? Exactly what is going on? Talk to us about those things.
Jay, if you look at the National Health Act, and if you look at the white paper on the transformation of the health sector, you will see that the intention is to create a national health system that is unified and integrated. That was always the intention. But if you look at the input side, and if you look at some of the outputs, you will see a significant variation across provinces in this country. So the Western Cape looks very different from Limpopo, including on the expenditure side, on the per capita expenditure side. The city of Cape Town, for example, on primary health care in 2004, spent 300 rand per person. Some districts in Limpopo in 2004 were spending 50 rand per person on primary health care. Now, you can't expect the same health outcomes if you spend such vastly different amounts on primary health care, for example. And that goes across the board. And I think the slide by National Treasury that shows the per capita variation across the country is indeed true, that we have that kind of variation. Now the question is, why do we have that kind of variation? The reason for that is fairly simple. The Constitution makes provision that provincial treasuries allocate funding to provincial departments of health, which means that each province then will determine what priority to give health, and therefore will give different amounts. And we see that reflected certainly since 1997, when provinces have a fair amount of autonomy in terms of the equitable share distribution within provinces to divide up the cake within provinces by departments. Now, the question is, how do we get around this problem? One way to get around this problem is to approach a normative approach to allocation of funds. And therefore we should say then that every person, regardless of which part of the country he or she lives in, should be allocated, for example, 300 rand per capita per year for about 3 visits per year for primary health care. And we do it then for hospitals at each level of care as well. So that's one way to go. Now if we do that, we will soon find that based on the packages of care that we in the National Department have designed that will give good outcomes in terms of healthcare delivery, you will find that the current allocation of 60 billion odd rand in the public sector is totally inadequate if we do that. So if you take a normative approach, and depending on where you set the norm, you might find that it's unaffordable to do the same throughout the country. So the question is then, what do you do? And that's the question I think that this committee should also deliberate on. Should we take a normative approach and say that everybody should get the same amount spent on it? The second challenge, of course, is that we have a very big private sector in this country. The private sector, I think members will know, takes care of about 7 million of our 47 million people in the country. But spends, I think the slide shows, both from Treasury and ourselves, 5% of GDP. Now if you translate that into rands and cents, it means that for every 1,000 rands we spend on a patient in the public sector, the private sector spends between 7 and 8,000 rands. Now that level of inequity as well cannot be really tolerated, to be quite honest. If you look at the burden of disease, again you will see significant variation. Let's take TB for example. The biggest burden of disease for TB is in the coastal provinces. So KwaZulu-Natal, the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape have the highest burden of TB. Now the burden of TB in the country as a whole is reaching 700 per 100,000 population. Now anything over 300, 350 in terms of the World Health Organization is a big problem. And we've got almost doubled. So the question is, do we have the funds to deal with TB, for example? We are dealing with the TB challenge. It is a challenge. There's no question about it. With 700 caseload against 100,000 population. But the good news is that our 2006 data shows that the TB cure rate has improved from the figures shown by National Treasury to 57.7%. 11 districts in the country have now got a cure rate of above 70%. So again, it shows that...
No, hang on. Just a minute. So where are the figures that we're talking about that have improved?
It's figures we are going to report to the World Health Organization that we just compiled.
No. Before you even go to the World Health Organization, we want to know, talk about those figures ourselves. Charity begins at home. You can't be giving those figures to the World Health Organization before you see. In other words, what you must then do is when you finish responding today, finish those figures to us now, and even both to National Treasury. Okay?
Yeah, the figures that the Treasury are showing are 2005 figures. We've just compiled those things.
Current ones, after yep. You've responded.
We will. With respect to changing the configuration of hospitals, I think the Western Cape is here, they can speak to it. But what we're suggesting is that we have a significant amount of primary health care and outpatient visits to hospitals that need not occur. The unit cost of those services are much higher than if we provide them in community health centers or district hospitals in the case of Furuski. So the 90-bed cut in Furuski is really a relocation of those services to two other hospitals. So it's not a cut of tertiary services in Furuski. And I think that's the kind of nuanced difference. So to come within budget, one has to then shift patients to where they are most efficiently treated. That will be primary health care and district hospitals. With respect to the backlog, so we've recently completed a study to look at, given the baskets of services that we think we should be providing at each level of care, what the real costs will be. Now the real costs are much higher than the budget. Even moving forward in in 5 years' time, even if we get a 3.6% real increase year on year, we think we will be under budget by some 30 billion. So there are some budgeting difficulties. In terms of antiretroviral sites, I must say that the National Department prefers to call these comprehensive plan service points, because these service points, the over 300 of which the Honourable Member referred to, do indeed provide a comprehensive basket of services and not only antiretroviral medication. There's nutrition services, counselling, a whole basket of services. Now clearly there's an intention to increase access to that basket of services. And I think the projection by the National Treasury shows that in a couple of years we will be, in the MTF period, we will be doubling the figures to some 600,000 patients just on antiretrovirals. We have over 5 million people who are HIV positive, as members will know. I think the one addition here that we should make in terms of how much of this increase is real is to suggest that the increases need to also take into consideration the fact that medical inflation runs on average 2 to 3% higher than CPIA. So we need to do a slight further discounting of CPIX calculated inflation to take into account medical inflation. The reality is that almost all equipment is imported into the country, and significant amounts of drugs are imported into the country. The generic component is small. So we need to also take account of medical inflation. With respect to staffing, we have vacancies in all provinces with respect to all categories of staff, from doctors, nurses, pharmacists, dentists, to the occupational therapists and speech therapists. The hope is the recently announced occupation-specific dispensation for nurses, which will come into effect this year, and for doctors, pharmacists, and other categories next year and the outer year, will go some way to attracting back, both from the private sector and from countries overseas, doctors, nurses, and other health professionals trained in this country. So we are hoping then that the fairly significant increases in salaries will indeed improve the staffing level. On the cross-border flows, I think the MEC from the Free State is here, and he will respond to what they're trying to do with respect to the cross-border flows between the Switzerland and the Free State. I'll now turn over to my colleague, the CFO, for other issues.
Perhaps it will serve us, it would be a good thing if we could look at slide 67 of the presentation made by myself. And that will indicate, I think, what the discussion we've been having in terms of growth in budget and the rate of spending. If we look at the slide number 67, which is table 3.19, it talks about the per capita health funding trend for the province. If we look at 2003-04, we can see that the norm was a 969. That was the time Northwest was very low, likewise the Limpopo and Mpumalanga, for Zulu to a less extent. Now, those were the provinces that were below the norm. And if you look at the variance that occurred in 2003-04, it was quite significant. If we now look at 2009-10 on the other side, we can see that Northwest is still below the norm at 1490, where the norm is 1720. Mpumalanga is 1483 and Limpopo is 1488. KwaZulu has grown quite substantially, 1746, which is now on the norm. So on the one side we say we want to promote additional allocation to the province.
That's who's responsible for this?
As indicated by my colleague, terms of the policies of the country, the provincial treasury does the allocation. So we welcome growth rate of higher than the norm for the benchmark, for these provinces we are below the norm in terms of per capita expenditure. But at the same time, we need to say that the two things happen. On the one side, we promoted growth in the provinces where we were below the norm, and from the top, we saw a reduced growth rate of the provinces that were well funded. But we need to guard against those provinces then slipping below what is being required in terms of the services that we need to do. So therefore, if you look at the 3.5% growth by between the 33 states and Caltech, that will mean to say to you the demand for our service has outstripped the allocation of the budget. Therefore, we need to look at that and say we need to up that. So that takes care of to a large extent the expenditure that's deferred. And I'm trying to have a macro view of this. I'm not trying to use it as a micro view. It also tells us that the spending and the expenditure is available to the province is not over the equity is not really visible in this particular case. And that makes the question the point that I made earlier. If you want to provide a seamless national service, health service, we need to strive to get these figures to be as close as possible to the norm or the average. In terms of that also covers to a large extent the point made on slide number 7, the explanation given by Mr. Kenneth Brown in terms of the net and the growth over Russia.
Just on the Mr. Sopak.
I think just before we pass this one, in terms of this allocation to the capital now that the state already speaking to. He says that in answering your question in terms of why this is the case, he said that the provincial federalists are responsible for the allocation of the province. But our understanding is that national department sets the benchmark. Follow what you call it. Let me just finish. Just so that when you respond, I must understand as well. I thought that you were saying in terms of, on average, for the norms, it's supposed to be 1,727. And now the departments are not there. Provincial departments are not there. Now, I'm saying, what I don't understand is, when we say that the provincial federal are responsible for this allocation, and I don't think that the provincial federal would allocate something that, I mean, the provincial departments would allow that they get an allocation that is less than the your normal average, that your required average. And why is it accepted?
In fact, this is one thing is correct. If you remember yesterday, with roads, there was a similar assertion. Now it is coming again. Now the way I wanted to rule was that we needed to ourselves now, and themselves, and even national treasury, to monitor this, especially this coming budget, because it does pose these problems and challenges. So I'm saying what we must do. You see, the problem is this is the whilst you're raising the issue of some guideline and norm, unfortunately, this is not a conditional grant, on the one hand. It is the equitable share. And so people do all sorts of things. I'm saying that I think what you are raising is critical just in terms of the norm. So what it then means is that ourselves must monitor the appropriation bills in the provinces together with our own colleagues in the provinces next year, whilst we will also monitor the division of revenue ourselves, because it is coming for the second time now. I mean, we were saying this thing about roads yesterday. The baseline were reduced, if you had heard yesterday. And clearly, each province here again is using its own discretion in terms of doing this thing. So I'm just saying, and this is why we must also invite the same department on the 6th of October, I mean to say of November, when we are dealing with the spending, because provincial treasurers will be here. So that we must also raise the same questions with the provincial treasurers. Exactly why are they doing this thing themselves in the context of all these needs? I mean, he says clearly, if you look at this thing clearly, there is some outstripping of the available budget, but then the MEC funding for the Free State must respond for the Free State. But then let's also pick up this discussion for the other provinces in respect of the provincial treasure. I think there is something wrong that is happening there. You remember, it is the same provincial treasuries that allow for pockets of development funds in some provinces, for instance. And on the other hand, they become much more stricter on other things. So clearly there's also something that provincial treasuries are not doing right. You may proceed, Mr. Matt. I've seen the Deputy Minister of Social Development. Welcome, madam.
Honourable Chair, just to collect the point, in terms of the slide that we discussed in 1.7, which is the average, it's not the benchmark, the average allocation. That's why we say, they say this is what the
but Mr. Mellor, let's say, we want you to consider, I think that's what he's saying, let's find a way of finding some benchmark. So that exactly the issue you are raising of a seamless health provision becomes problematic. How do you also benchmark that? We are not saying now, but it would be nice if you yourself can start thinking about some form of a benchmark, if you like, so that all of us are able to judge everybody on the basis of that benchmark.
Thank you, Chair. Point taken. The other issue that we just need to raise from my side is to say that in terms of the space that we are looking at, you must be remembered that we are looking to a large extent at what's happened in the past. So the most recent announcements and allocations in terms of the OSD. We haven't seen the result of that fight. We haven't seen the result of our actions we are taking in terms of E and the EMS, where we train a lot of people, and they are still in training. They're still not out of the training college regarding services and such. I think that's about the most that I would like to say my colleagues to the problem.
Well, welcome to the MEC for State. Can you say something?
Thank you, Justice and Honorable Members. Yeah, I think the presentation captures some of the areas and the explanation given by Dr. Jürgen Delay from National Department of Health explains some of these issues in context, because we do discuss them, Chairperson, Honorable Members, at our monthly meetings as the national team that is responsible for the provision of health care in the country. Having said that, Chairperson, I want to concur firstly with some of the slides that I would like to highlight from the national presentation, that is the national treasure. For example, slide 9 captures our situation aptly, that there is a demand for health services that outstrips the availability. That's the reality. This then I use to explain partly the problem that we are faced with of over expenditure, which was presented in one of the slides. It is because of this demand. Perhaps I need to hasten, Chairperson, that when we discuss over expenditure and under expenditure, perhaps we also need, as this committee, to say in which areas of service delivery do we find these cost drivers. Your slide 13 would also emphasize these concerns as picked up by National Treasure. But without belaboring this point, slide 17 brings up part of the cost drivers for the over-expenditure, because slide 17 would say there is a large growth in certain sectors. Now here, just to illustrate it further, Chairperson, the length of stay of our patients in district hospitals because of the burden of diseases has grown phenomenally. We used to have longer length of stays at tertiary hospitals, but because of the burden of disease, we've seen these days that the length of stay, even at district hospital, is longer and sometimes longer than the length of stay at tertiary hospitals. And then, Chairperson, on slide 19, I just want to pick this up. There was a question raised about the figures that 2001-2002 we were at 3.7 as a country, and last year we were at 3.5, and the conclusion is that it has dropped. Yes, perhaps the figures indicate, but I agree with the bullet that says patients in hospitals are generally requiring more and a higher level of care. And as matters stand, despite all these challenges, no patients are ever turned away from our facilities. It is government policy, and we make sure that we provide health care services to the best of our ability with the funds available. On the matter of cross-border, Chairperson, I think it is now common cause that many people in our bordering countries do use South African residential addresses when they go for services, particularly health care services. And given that nobody gets turned away, obviously, our latest half-year statistics for our primary health care in the province indicate that our numbers have grown significantly. All these, Chairperson, impact on our funding. Just your explanation to conclude, Chairperson, before I ask the CFO to give more detail on some of the things, and the head of department. Your explanation on the allocation is correct, that provinces have their priorities, and discussions do take place within the province, that what is it that the province want to privatize because of the cake that the province is given has to be divided amongst all the departments. So if the province in its strategic plan has prioritized certain things, it becomes a provincial government program to support those areas. I will ask the head of department just to indicate what our challenges are as we had requested, and what would these challenges be on a service delivery. And what is it that we are doing to deal with the situation? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, committee members of the committee. I think slide number 27 basically captures the essence of the problem that exists in the Free State. It's indicated there that the Free State has had a chronic underfunding, which is actually at 3.5, which is about 1.5 less than the national average. And if you work that back, it works out to between 90 and 100 million rand underfunding on an annual basis. Against that, there is also, you know, we were also experiencing increasing activity levels. And the biggest cost driver, as has already been indicated in other presentations, is that the cost of our personnel has actually gone up. Goods and services expenditure has also gone up, and some of our support services. But I think what is important here is to also link this to some of the health outcomes. And you will realize that, for example, in the Free State, in terms of TB and MD, we've got about 257 MDR patients that are recorded. And yet, out of those patients, only 60 of them are actually hospitalized, which means that a greater portion of the patients that we have are actually out in the community. In terms of the capacity of our admission, we have a TB hospital that has got 70 beds only, 10 of which are reserved for MDR and 60, 10 of which are for XDR patients and 60 for MDR patients. In terms of a report that we've received now from National Health Laboratory Services, they've indicated that outside these patients, there is an additional between 200 and 250 patients that they have picked up which are not within the system at the moment. And those are patients that we still need to go out and find. And if we look at maternal mortality, the Free State figures are at around 340, between 340 and 360 per 100,000. And this figure is continuously increasing. And I think those are just those two examples show that we're actually under a massive pressure to fund our services differently. However, because of the over expenditure, for example, of last year, provincial treasury has actually charged that 92 million rand over expenditure to our current allocation, which means that we start with a budget that is less 92 million. In addition to that, we are projecting an over expenditure of 65 million in this current financial year. That means that we've got to save about 150 million from our current allocation. The problem with that is that we've got to find the money somewhere. And in our discussions with provincial treasury, they've actually indicated that they are serious about us having to save that money, where they've actually even said that they can place us under Section 100. This compels us to put certain measures in place in order to try and come within our current allocation. And that means, despite all the pressures that we are facing, we have got to defer the purchases of equipment and vehicles, and in many areas there are pressures to actually buy some of these equipment, especially for our rural health services where we do outreach programs. In terms of surgery and some of the medical cases, we are actually deferring surgery on cold cases, and we're mainly working now with emergency or acute cases. We're trying to drive down our levels of stock in all the hospitals, and therefore we are trying, in terms of our consumables, to control our expenditure there. And then there are also the issue around traveling and meeting and training costs, which we are also trying to contain so that we can come within expenditure. If we do well on any of these measures, I think at best we might, according to our current calculations, we might actually only be able to save around between 50 and 60 million, which means we might still come within the current allocation, but the 92 million that was charged to our current allocation will still not be able to pay that back. So in general, the province is under serious pressure, even at the primary healthcare level. I think if you look at the type of patients that seek primary healthcare at the moment, those patients are a lot sicker than they used to be. And the investigations that are now done at primary healthcare level is no longer just a sputum for TB and urine, but there are many other blood tests that are being done, which traditionally were done at our regional hospitals and tertiary hospitals. As I speak now, in terms of the NHLS expenditure, there's a projected over-expenditure of 100 million against the budget that we have. And since the advent of the National Health Laboratory Services, that alone has driven costs up within the hospitals by between 30 and 40%. And it varies in different areas. So NHLS and blood services are one of our highest expenditures, within the system, and there's virtually no other way in which this can be controlled. The CD4 count tests that we do, all the other various tests are actually assisting, and because now NHLS actually has to fund their own personnel and their activities, it is difficult for us to negotiate with them how to rationalize their tests, because if they help us in the rationalization of their tests, it actually means that they are driving their income down, and that is not the situation that they would want to see. So we're actually having major problems on many fronts. I think the CFO will add the issues that are
setting up. You've taken all the chunk. Now, firstly, let me just say to you, your provincial treasury ought not to refer to Section 100 in terms of your case. They first must go to Section 18 of the TFMA. In other words, what is it that they do? 18EF. What is it that they do to assist you as a province or as a department before they even revert to Section 100, and therefore it is incorrect for them to even consider going that route first and foremost. I think that's the one thing I really wanted to raise with you. But secondly, you have not responded to the draconian clauses of the CFMA, which are those. If you're not able to raise them off your head now, give me those in writing, because part of what you must do is to look at whether we might want to or not want to amend then the CFMA. But I can tell you now, some of my colleagues were saying the CFMA is toothless. And so clearly we might want to strengthen the CFMA instead of doing the opposite. But lastly, can you then tell us again, there is this per capita spending of less than 200 rand in this district hospital. If we're being here under Gracie Kukuni and so on, why is that so? And what is being done to address this problem?
We are looking at that. Just to say, that this is a marked improvement of what we've seen over the last couple of years. So the gap is closing. Part of the reason there's still a gap would be absorptive capacity of those districts, especially with respect to staffing. So these are the more rural areas, and you will see, with some exceptions, like Sedibeng, for example. But even parts of Sedibeng are rural. But part of the problem is absorptive capacity and ability to employ staff. I mean, that's the bulk of the problem here. But the gap is happily closing, slowly.
Then give me the draconian clauses in writing in the next 2 days. Ethan K, you've got to say something about this problem. Huge understanding, huge challenges. What's going on?
Thank you, Chair. I will respond on the understanding. The Eastern Cape, we were allocated an additional budget of about 400 million around January of 2007. That meant that we had 2 months within it to spend the money. This amount was for, the 30 million of this amount was for assisting the department with an audit intervention and to set up a document center.
What was the money for? In January?
Yes.
What was it for? Where did it come from?
From Treasury. From Treasury, say, from the provincial Treasury.
Then there's something wrong. This is the adjustment period. Now, there was something wrong with your budgeting. You were given money at that time. In January. In fact, it was financial jumping. Because it was towards the end of the last financial year. That was financial jumping by your own problem. Exactly this point you are raising, so called. No, this is exactly the point. This is the point you are raising. Where provincial treasuries sit with money and do not allocate and wait for this kind of a period. But then you are right. Why did provincial treasury do this? And I think what you must also do, can you also write that in writing for us so that as we meet with them, we've got to deal with this problem. Gave you the money in January when they knew that only 20, when was the budget day? This year. 23. 21st of February. That's exactly the problem. Proceed, madam.
Sorry, sir. Just in terms of time frame, thanks for that. The period within which we must get that information from the health and system. 7 days, fine.
2 days. Yeah.
Then the 57, part of this amount was used for backlog relating to personnel. The 30 million then was not used because the document center was only set up around February, March, and it has only been established. It was going to take about 6 months. The amount has been paid in this current year. 57 million of the understanding relates to foreign departments, and that is the problem with all other provinces. The transfer took place last year, and we have rolled over we have requested a rollover for the amount, and that takes care of 18 million.
Well, madam, it's going to be verified. Because we're also not sure why we could lump this together. Because the forensic pathology is something else, conditional grant. It cannot be lumped with the 400 that you're talking about that you got from the provincial treasurer. Yes, Mr. Logan.
But this issue of forensic pathology, is now the infrastructure in place? It was introduced 2004, and up to now, they have not been able to spend on this. Is the infrastructure in place now? Are they ready to run now with this conditional grant?
No, let's not deal with that one now. Let's keep in dark light. There's a problem of misinformation somewhere. Mr. Brown and Dr. Bless are going to go back to their file and give us that information in the next 2 days. Of course, we will deal with this matter with your own provincial treasurer of this huge financial dumping. Right, Mpumalanga, you are very late. I'm not sure what questions to raise with you, because by the time you walked in, the presentations were all done. The only problem we want to raise with you then is that you also have a problem of 19 million rand under spending. And that's the one thing. But then secondly, there is a concern from your national department about your capacity to spend. And so what are you doing about that? And maybe let's also ask the national department, what are you doing about this problem, capacity to spend, in terms of the provinces? Ajo Mpumalanga can respond, well, what are you doing with this capacity problem that you have of spending?
My apologies, Chairperson. I did send the message. I find myself being disadvantaged because I'm coming just in the middle of the discussion, and I'm not even sure as well I'll be able to get the context.
You have a problem to spend, and so what is it that you're doing about that?
I'm not sure actually what the basis of your concern is. If it has been raised that there's a problem, we have got a problem of the capacity to spend. Because our expenditure last year, in the last financial year, was in the region of 99, and currently we are at about 44%, and we. There are a number of areas where we have deliberately where we have taken decisions that we have got to put certain plans in place. That is in the area that in the procurement of furniture, computers, vehicles, and also the maintenance plan. What we had observed was that even if there was expenditure in the last financial year, the kind of indications that we're getting from institutions and from district, it was clear that the absence of an annual plan, a procurement plan, was in fact opening us to a situation where as a department we would find ourselves going against the PSMA. Just to give an example, in the replacement of vehicles, we had found that it looked like people were being more fashionable than practical in terms of the choice of vehicles that have been put in the acquisition plan. And as such, we said that we agreed in the department to say that the CFO must lead the action of making sure that when we procure what we need, but we not procure what people what in many instances would be more wasteful. If one were to give an example of vehicles, the kind of vehicles that people were putting as vehicles that they need to replace whatever that was there would be standard and even hard body double cab with a particular engine capacity. So we are confident that with the lifting of the moratorium on the purchase of certain things, but also with furniture, where you find that there's evidence that people were buying a chair of the cost of about 18,000 rand a chair, which is not acceptable, we'll be able to correct those by having proper plans. But we are very confident that we are able to spend the department. Thank you.
Well, you will have to resolve that other problem with the national department, but we will be watching the space. Mr. Mella?
Okay.
attempt to start circumvention under the Spanish which is indicated on page 7 or slide number 7, page 4. If we look at that, we say there's an underover expenditure in 379, as indicated by myself and John. The gross under expenditure is 736. In other words, we add the 92, the 386, and the 378, and the 91 together to get to that. If we turn to slide number 10 on page 5, bear in mind that the necessity of limited plus number 7 includes conditional grant. If you just look at slide number 10, on the far right hand side of the column, we see that the hospital revitalization is that and other spending of 142 million and 217 in terms of the hospital. If we deduct that from the gross overrun, it's about 334 million that was the understatement. That, Honorable Chair, is less than 0.7% of the total amount available for spending. Now, when agencies are responsible to not to overspend their budget, so in terms of the management of their funding, they will try to come in under budget, and therefore, they have a small under expenditure. It is preferable to having an over expenditure. And that I'll explain to you as more fully in the reply. But I would like to emphasize that although the 300 million sounds a big number, so the total context is less than 0.7% of the budget.
Okay, I can tell you that. You may switch off your mic. Now, part of what you must respond to in writing is the problem is that engineers, they are spending, and in which areas do they engineer that spending in the context of the draconian law? Now, we will not put the brand new HOD of the Northern Cape on the spot for now. We see the picture, we know the picture. We'll give you some time until November. So we don't want to be nasty. We know you've been brought in to try and turn around that department. And so we really wish you well in that regard. Mr. Brown, you picked up something.
Yeah, no, while the meeting went on, I just contacted my office actually in Pretoria to find out whether an adjustment has been made in the Eastern Cape to their budget in January. And according to our records, no adjustment has been made in January. The only provinces where adjustments have been made during the last quarter was Limpopo and Gauteng during that time. But what I want to do is to refer the House to page 146 of the review itself, so that we put a bit of the understanding in the Eastern Cape in a bit of a context there. What we will see there is they've got an overspending in current payments of page 146. Yeah, there's an overspending in current payments, which there's a slight underspending in personnel there, of about 9 million, 10 million. The, on capital assets, actually the underspending is slow, it's a small underspending of about 11 there. The bulk of the underspending is actually in transfers that are made outside of the department there. So, but, I mean, we can take it up at another meeting to clarify a lot of that.
See, this is a very big problem. It's a provincial treasury problem. I mean, again, the provincial treasury in the same case is doing something wrong. You remember what they did for 4 or 5 years in respect of the TIG. Now they're doing something. I'm not sure what the the problem is it's something that we've got to pick up and engage with them on the 6th of November. Let's thank then everybody for the useful discussions. Really, clearly we're picking up funny trends in terms of what's going on, especially in the provinces. Again, in the provincial treasuries. Provincial treasuries must ensure that provincial departments comply with the law, the Division of Revenue Act, the PFMA, etc. It is the same provincial treasuries that are creating problems. Right? Now, having said that, in welcoming then the Deputy Minister of Social Development and her team, let's first allow again National Treasury to set the tone in terms of their submission on the social development sector, and then we'll then allow the minister to come in and her team to dispute these things that are coming from National Treasury.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. If I just run through the 2006 outcome for social development as a sector, I think members know from before that we are quite concerned that there is under expenditure in the sector, especially in KZN, Mpumalanga and the Northwest, especially in light of adjustments made in the year given the need in the sector. And so those three provinces should explain what is going on there. In terms of program spending, across the provinces there's quite a bit of variation as to how, once they have their budgets, how they divide it amongst administration, social welfare services, and development and research. And you can see, if we just take the average percent at the bottom, there's quite a wide variation in administration. If the average is roughly 25.6, we've gotten from Mpumalanga only devoting 15.7, but the Northwest devoting 30.2, which is almost double the amount. The same goes for the variations between social welfare services and development and research. Gauteng is quite strongly focused on social welfare services, but Limpopo, for example, has got a slightly stronger focus on development and research. And maybe those provinces can again talk to the choices that they're making in terms of which programs to focus on and which to focus less on. If we look inside the social welfare services at the sub-program level, and we look at some of the key programs like substance abuse and prevention, we can see that there's some growth there, but off a very low base. The same for crime prevention and support. A good base for child care and protection services, which shows that allocations in previous years' budgets were focused on that sub-program and continue to be focused on that sub-program. Disappointing is the amount of money allocated across the provinces for victim empowerment. HIV and AIDS is fine, as well as care and support services to families. So even within a program that's growing quite strongly, in general, when you look at the sub-programs, it is a slightly different picture. In terms of program spending as a whole, now that social grants have moved up to national, and this will be the second year that it would have been up at national, social development departments have had a chance to focus quite crisply on what they are doing in terms of their sector. And in fact, provinces as a whole have devoted quite a fair amount of resources. If you compare the growth rate here to the growth rate in health, for 203 or 4 to 206 or 7, there's roughly a 17% growth, and going forward, there's a 15.5% growth. And distributed somewhat differently, somewhat of a focus on compensation of employees, which talks to that the sector is driven by social workers, and also a good step up in non-profit institutions and transfers to NGOs, again indicating that this is a sector in which government is not the sole provider of services, and that there's quite a good relationship between government and non-government organizations in terms of delivery. Although I will show later that there are some variations again within the provinces. So fairly good growth for the period in the history as well as the period ahead. When we get to real per capita expenditure on welfare services, then we start to see the variations amongst the provinces. All the provinces are moving towards putting more and more into welfare services, but some are growing at a much faster rate than others. What I'd like to highlight here is if we just compare Gauteng and the Northern Cape. The starting point for the Northern Cape in 2003-04 was 188 per poor person versus Gauteng at 228. If you take the projections right to the end of the period in 2009-10, then the Northern Cape will be spending 662 versus the Gauteng 6112, even though they started off from a lower base. So choices are clearly being made in provinces as to how fast they wish to step up their social development budget. And it would be the same question, Chairperson, that you asked before, who decides on the allocation? The Provincial Executive Council decide on the allocation. People might like to believe that the Provincial Treasury and the National Treasury decide on allocations, but we don't. So just to make that point, it's the Provincial Executive Council that decides on how much money goes to each sector in the province. In terms of actual service delivery, just a couple of slides, services to older persons. And again, this is just to highlight the variations between the provinces. What some of these show, like the Home for the Aged, is a legacy problem from pre-1994, when most of the old age homes would have been in the Western Cape, as you can see, there are 132. Currently, versus Limpopo's 8, that's an approach that departments in the provinces take to how they deal with the elderly. It's not necessarily a reflection that the Western Cape is more for the older persons than Limpopo does, but that is what is on the ground. If you look at services non-related to residential care, like aged clients council, which doesn't mean they're in the facilities, again, a fairly wide variation between what happens in particular provinces. For example, KwaZulu-Natal provides by far more of these services than any of the other provinces. Services to children. Here in particular, I'm focusing on ECD, because ECD has been a big focus in the last two MPS and will continue into the future. What the first column shows you is definitely a problem in terms of how tax is registered. And I'll talk a bit about some of the complications there, but as you can see, total number of registered sites, Eastern Cape is completely leading the pack. And they may be able to explain how it is possible for them to have registered so many sites in comparison with Limpopo, who's only registered 11, and that is 2006 figures. The same goes for the number of skilled care facilities. We are at 16 at the moment, and the distribution is also quite unequal, with Gauteng having 5, other provinces having 2, and some having only 1. In terms of services to children, we've got good registration of ECD sites, but as you can see, if you just look at the 6,508 figure, as a total, it would look fine, but you see that distribution on the previous slide is in fact quite unequally distributed. In total, provision of subsidies to children from poor households, just over 314,000 children getting subsidies, total amount of roughly 350 million. Expansion of ECD is planned over the medium term, but there are some definite key challenges. So one is the capacity and the bureaucracy around registration. So this is one of the things that in which local government also plays a role. They provide norms and standards and what can be registered as an ECD site and what can't. There's the issue of aligning ECD provincial profits. So where people are at the moment and where they should be quite clearly specified. A bigger problem is the cooperation and coordination with other departments, and in this instance, especially education, although health is also involved here. And this really needs to be sorted out, otherwise we will not get proper ECD services. And then ECD is not just about bringing children together and sticking them in a space for somebody to look after them. There are infrastructure requirements as well as equipment. With social assistance, that's the grant removed. There are quite different approaches to developing welfare services. And you can see when you look at the expenditure shares in the beginning that you've got the Western Cape and the Northern Cape are continuing to follow a predominantly welfare approach, whereas Limpopo and KZN seem to focus on community development. And maybe the national departments can talk to what is their vision for, may I use our word here, shape of a seamless delivery of social development services. For all provinces, there is a strong reliance on non-governmental organizations as partners in service delivery. Government and NGOs are the largest employers of social workers. And here we see some kind of problem because we're competing for scarce resources. And in particular, social workers, which remains the biggest concern in the sector. It does aim for service delivery. What is being done is social observatory workers. Although that, as you well know, Chairperson, the more people you bring in, you also have to supervise and train them, so you don't see any immediate effect, even if you employ a good number of social observatory workers. A bigger focus on getting more social workers by awarding bursaries, but again, social work degree is 4 years, so if we started 1,000 people last year, we'll only see them in 4 years' time, assuming everybody passes. There definitely needs to be a conducting of an audit of working conditions for social workers. They vary greatly among the provinces, as well as getting the norms and standards so that people work towards an acceptable level of service delivery, and then quite importantly, monitoring of what is being delivered and evaluating whether that is the best way to do things. From the sector side, running more from a national perspective is the development of a national information management system. We also, with the departments, are looking at new budget structures so that we can see in more detail what is being delivered in social development departments in the provinces. And then there are a number of other projects at the national level that try to bridge the grant with social welfare delivery in provinces, and that's by linking grants to sustainable livelihoods. There's the National Integrated Social Information System as well as the Orphans Register. Quite a few developments on the legislative front. The Older Persons Act, the Children's Act, which is being currently discussed, the prevention and treatment of substance abuse bill, the child justice bill is to be passed, and then there's also the Social Services Protection Act. But provinces, I will say, have not been waiting for the legislation. They are moving and reorienting themselves, so when the legislation gets passed, they are already up and running and can just move with greater speed. So there are some positive developments in provinces. Funding for the sector has grown and the sector continues to grow. And from our point of view, the focus should now be on improving implementation. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Madam. Deputy Minister, dispute or confirm what she has said?
I think we, our presentation largely confirms what has been said, and maybe just one or two clarifications, but we would like to see the presentation our perspective. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair and Members. My name is Viola Klapo, and I'm the Acting Director General, and I'll be presenting. The presentation will look at certain aspects, a brief introduction, the sector priorities, and thirdly, sector performance review for 2006 and 2007. We'll also look at the provincial expenditure report for 2006 and 2007. Also provincial expenditure report for 7 and 8 up to 31st August 2007. We'll look at the challenges and corrective measures that are taken to address the challenges, and also look at the future medium-term expenditure framework and priorities, and lastly, the conclusion. And as the Deputy Minister has indicated, our presentation is aligned to the presentation that has just been made by a national treasurer. Just a very brief introduction. As indicated, the primary focus of social development sector in the provincial sphere is now on social welfare services as well as community development since the shifting of social security to the national office. These services include services that are aimed at supporting the aged, needy children, youth, people with disabilities, victims of crime, families, and communities. And it is important to note that while provinces have been performing these services in the past, their focus tended to be more on the rising demands of social security. And hence, with the shift of the social security, now there is much more emphasis and focus in terms of these services. The sharp focus on social welfare and community development services is evident on a number of fronts. First, there is increased attention given to formulating policies and developing various pieces of legislation that support developmental welfare. There is also increased amount of resources that are allocated to the sector in line with the developmental welfare imperative. And also, there is greater recognition of the role of non-governmental organizations as partners in meeting the challenge of delivering improved welfare services to those who are in need. And as such, we have really recognized that we cannot deliver these services alone as government, and hence the importance of partnership with non-governmental organizations. With regard to the priorities for the sector, we have put the following priorities. First, expansion and consolidation of services to children, youth, older persons, women, as well as people with disabilities. And again, we have put emphasis or a priority in terms of this because we have recognized that there is still a gap in terms of access to these services in other communities, hence the focus on this. But also our priority also is in terms of building capacity for civil society organizations, recognizing that there are important delivery mechanisms that assist us in delivering these services. The third sector priority is around the expanded public works program, which is a key government priority. And I need to emphasize here that in terms of the sector itself, our two focus areas in terms of expanded public works program is around early childhood development and home community-based care. And again, the emphasis in terms of the social sector is not just creating jobs, but also ensuring that there is training, but also there is expansion of services. Then the fourth sector priority is around human capital development. And here we're looking at social workers, auxiliary social workers, community development practitioners, child and youth care workers, as well as probation and assistant probation officers. Honorable Chair, looking at the performance review for 2006 and 2007, we have achieved various aspects in terms of services to children. We have a new child care legislation, and the Section 75 Children's Bill was signed by the President in June 2006, and it is now referred to as the Children's Act No. 38 of 2005. Also, the Children's Amendment Bill, previously known as the Section 76 part of the Children's Bill, was introduced to Parliament in July 2006 and passed by the NCOP, and it is currently now being dealt with by the National Assembly. And also the development of regulations is underway. With regard to early child development, social development departments are responsible for children between 0 to 4 years. And we have a responsibility, as indicated earlier on by Treasury, that we focus on the registration of ECG sites in accordance with the Child Care Act, and also we provide subsidies, particularly to children that are coming from poor households. The sector registered approximately 1,500 sites in 2006-07, bringing the number of registered sites to 11,000. And there is on average an ECG site for every 485 children in the country. And I need to indicate, Honorable Chair, that this is one of the areas that we really still need some improvement if you look at that average in terms of one ECG site for 485 children. And as you'll see as we move forward in terms of even our priorities is ensuring that we accelerate the registration of ECG sites so that we can begin to have more children accessing these services. In terms of the amount paid to the subsidy, for it is approximately for 314,912 children. The total amount paid towards these subsidies amounts to 310 million rand, and this was mentioned earlier on. With regard to alternative care, we have developed a comprehensive residential care database of registered child and youth care centers. We have also installed the child protection register in all provinces, and the process of updating these databases in all provinces is underway. We have, with regard to adoptions and international social services, we have registered 253 inter-country adoptions and 2,166 domestic adoptions. Children in conflict with the law, approximately 1,986 children benefited from the home-based supervision program, and 12,770 were diverted from the criminal justice system. Three secure care facilities were completed, one in the Free State and two in the Northwest. On social crime prevention, we have provided training and placement of probation officers. We have 187 young people who completed the block training on volunteer assistant probation officers program, and 93 probation officers from all provinces were also trained as assessors and mentors of voluntary assistant probation officers. With regard to services to older persons, the Older Persons Act of 2006 was passed and regulations are currently being drafted. We also developed a model for community-based care and support services for older persons. As indicated in the previous presentation by Treasury, there is skewed distribution in terms of old age homes There are 466 OJs from throughout the country, and about 49% are in Gauteng and Western Cape. A large proportion of the air value, approximately 38%, resides in KwaZulu-Natal. However, old age homes in this province account for only 19% of the total homes, compared to Northern Cape with 25 homes and an air value population proportion of 2%. Counseling services, KwaZulu-Natal records the most counseling services for elderly people, recording 42.3% of the number of cases, followed by Eastern Cape at 22.8%. Can just indicate, Honorable Sir, that this number of high counseling services, for, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal, it might indicate a change in the roles of the elderly, particularly given the fact that day by day the elderly people are becoming caregivers. And this might also indicate the emotional aspects and the stresses that go with this, and hence the high level of counseling services. With regard to community development, we have funded 1,700 home community-based care centers nationwide, providing a wide and varying number of services. An expanded public works program, we are, in addition to providing early childhood development as well as home community-based care, also providing coordination for the sector. And as such, we have established institutional mechanisms and structures for coordination and implementation of expanded public works program in the social sector. We have also developed strategies to facilitate expansion of early childhood development and home community-based care services. Overall, expanded public works program within the social sector created approximately 37,106 job opportunities at a cost of 402 million rand. I mentioned earlier on the importance of partnerships between ourselves and the NGOs, particularly in terms of delivering services. And as such, we have ensured that we provide support to these civil society organizations through capacity building. We have registered non-profit organizations, and these currently they are 44,062 which are registered, and they operate in different fields. With regard to funding of these organizations, the national and provincial departments provide funding to national organizations rendering services with the department in accordance with the provisions of the policy on financial awards to service providers. The national department awarded about 18 funded about the nation, about 18 national organizations, and the bulk of these non-governmental organizations are funded at provincial level. The National Development Agency also provides support to civil society organizations, and they have funded 95 projects in different provinces, and the amount for that is 110.9 million rand. And in addition to this amount, they've also dispersed 49.5 million rand to intermediary institutions involved in COA projects. What it means is that they transfer money to the organizations that would assist those communities at ground level. Also, with regard to capacity building of NGOs, the National Development Agency launched a capacity building program and has committed 25.7 million to strengthen capacity of civil society organizations. I'd like now to move to Provincial Expenditure Report 2006-07. With regard to the expenditure patterns of the provinces, we have Eastern Cape at 101.31%, Free State 99.38%, Gauteng 100.6%, KwaZulu-Natal 94.1%, Limpopo 121.5%, Mpumalanga 95.49%, Northern Cape 97.72%, Northwest 87.81.
What's the
case here? Okay, for a first.
Let me check this on
it. My husband. This is in the presentation that we listed in my head, so I'm sorry about that. With regard to spending by economic classification, we have compensation of employees, which grew by 12.6% annually over the 3-year period to 2006-07, and it is budgeted to grow by 11.3% annually from 2.2 billion in 2007-08 to 2.7 billion by 2009-10. We, however, due to supply side constraints, social development departments understand their personnel budgets in 2006-07, and this was mentioned earlier on by Trevor around the issue of supply for social workers. Also, transfers to non-profit organizations grew by 20.7% annually from 1.2 billion in 2003-04 to 2.2 billion in 2006-07. The growth in the budget is sustained in the years ahead, with transfers to NGOs growing to 3.7 billion by 2009-10. Infrastructure for delivering effective social welfare services has been identified for the sector in 2003-04 to 2009-10 period. Although starting from a low base, capital spending doubled from 116 million in 2003-04 to 248 million in 6-7, and is set to reach 457 million rand by 9-10. With regard to provincial expenditure outcomes for 6-7 financial year, provinces collectively spent around 5.172 billion, and in terms of percentage, this is 97% of total budget, excluding social security expenditure. Most understanding was in Mpumalanga, 6%, and this can be attributed to restructuring of delivery of social services to developmental services, and also challenges with regard to structural setup and the shortage of professionals. Also, there was understanding in KZN, 6%, and also this can be attributed to non-filling of vacancies as a result of the scarcity of social workers, as well as understanding in various services, like welfare services and community development. In Northwest, 12%, and the reason for understanding, delay in the completion of sector tests and industrial tech, increase in the number of ECDs that could not be registered, delays in transfers to community-based projects caused by departmental processes to strengthen internal control. I'd like us now to look at the provincial expenditure report for 7 and 8 up to 31st August 2007. If it provides the sum... Let me skip this. Challenges, if you look at the social development challenges, the first challenge is under expenditure on compensation of employees and goods and services, which was largely due to scarcity of social workers, probation officers, and assistant probation officers. The services that we provide in social development requires a number of social service professionals. And currently, these social service professionals are staff. Also, we have a long process of recruitment of staff and limited office accommodation for new staff. Also, the challenges that we face is the delays in transfers to non-governmental organizations and in other instances to municipalities due to compliance requirements. And also, we have delays in implementation of capital projects due to dependency on third parties acting as implementing agents. We have taken some corrective measures to address the challenges that we face, and as such, we have developed a recruitment and retention strategy for social service professions, and as indicated earlier on by Treasury, we are also providing bursaries, scholarships, and also support in terms of infrastructure. Also, we are looking at reducing the turnaround time for the recruitment and employment so that we can ensure that we do that within a very short period of time. Also, around the appointment of contract workers to sustain service delivery in cases where we cannot employ staff on permanent basis. We look at options of appointing workers on contract so that we can sustain service delivery. We are also looking at the development of a medium to long-term infrastructure plan with supportive capacity at a national and provincial level. And we also prioritize the capacity building of NPOs and intensify monitoring of transfers to non-profit organizations. With regard to addressing the shortage of social service professionals, the social development sector has undertaken a major recruitment drive to attract new entrants into the field of study. This has been supplemented by making available also the additional funding that we have obtained in terms of providing training for social auxiliary workers. With regard to future medium term MTF priorities, share with us. I would like to conclude, Honorable Chair, by indicating that the restructuring of the social development sector, which was partly triggered by shifting the social functions to the nation, here has really resulted in some positive developments for the sector, and this is indicated in terms of the refocus in terms of developmental welfare services as well as development. But also the funding for the sector has grown and is set to continue to grow over the MTF period. The sector has repositioned itself to deliver a comprehensive package of social services. And we have put in place measures to step up the recruitment and retention of social service professionals so that we can be able to fast-track the process. Unanticipated impact of shifting of social security functions to national government and the integral human resource for other social development services also is clear. And we have agreed with the head of social development, and I'll request my colleagues also to add on this point. We have agreed with head of social development and NINMED to have a forum where we will continually review progress in terms of spending and our achievements, and ensure that by doing so we are monitoring the extent to which we are expanding the budget that is provided to us, but also ensuring that that budget is spent on the priorities that we have set. Thank you.
Thank you, madam. The area I've said you must keep, I'm not sure we've got to correct our own program, Kwanele. Second quarter we'll deal with in November. We give you the date there. Just to take the questions there. Comments, questions, social development? No questions. Say what happens.
Well, I
thought
it
was just to what you say, I think what you just wanted to add was with regard to one of these points in the challenges regarding some unanticipated impact of shifting to SASA is the migration of staff from the provinces. So that has led to a temporary problem because a lot of high-level staff has actually taken up jobs in SASA, and so it's leading to a bit of a backlog and weakness within the provincial staff.
Thanks, Jay. The stuff that the Deputy Minister is talking about is not just the ring-fence social security staff. It will also be the migration of social services staff to SASA, which is why it's unanticipated. I think we could have anticipated social security staff, but it's also social workers that have moved, which is unanticipated. I think so that is in some of the provinces that have come up. I think when the treasury is quite right, when you look at the allocation between social welfare service and community development, part of what we're trying to do in terms of addressing that is to define exactly what is our community development product, in a sense. Social welfare services, the offerings are quite well known because we've been doing it for a long time. So we've been engaging in sector planning. We're beginning to define, for example, what is our approach to community development so that provinces in particular can take those up. So there's some innovative projects that are beginning to come up. For example, in the Eastern Cape, they're going to target 9,000 households to provide a basket of services to those households. We're also trying to the Banatile project in Gauteng, which follows the money in terms of child support grant. We're looking at how do we add value to the money the government is putting in for social grants to a basket of services. So hopefully over time, as we actually improve our sector strategic planning, that there is a kind of money allocated to what we term as community development would increase because the actual product would become a lot clearer. I think it's important that we emphasize the last point of our presentation around accountability, that we have an agreement within the sector now that our meetings on a quarterly basis at Heads of Social Development in Minmec become accountability forums. We've agreed, for example, on these are the sector priorities. We've asked Heads of Social Development and NECs to make sure that provinces bid for those so that we don't get into past practices where we have agreed on priorities but they're not being bid for at provincial level. And then also the strengthening of MNE, which is, you know, MNE approach is not just at national level but working very closely with provinces so that we can measure what we implement and look at what the weaknesses and gaps are there. So hopefully that will lead to the kind of seamless approach that National Treasury was talking about.
Thank you, Chairperson. The mention was made of the shortage of victim empowerment, and I think that is a very important area. Are there provinces, perhaps, that have no victim empowerment centers? And why, perhaps, is that this area it does not seem to enjoy support from provinces, if that is the case? But also the other question is related to the transfers that are made to your non-profit organization. The accountability there. How do you do your the last speaker mentioned the issue of your monitoring and evaluation. Have you got measures in place to ensure that what they are doing, perhaps value for money and accountability, those kind of things. You have also noted the disparities in the distribution of homes for the elderly. Is there a budget that is being provided to ensure that there is increase? But also I hear that, for example, you mentioned in the Northern Cape, 2% population, 25%. So there's oversupply of this homes in the Northern Cape. But elsewhere, what is being done to improve the situation? Last question is around the disbursements that are made by the National Development Agency. 95 projects, 110 million has been allocated for 95 projects. Is this grant funding? To this project, because the reason why I'm asking is that you have got two types of funding there. One is for projects and the other one is for your poor, what you call it, people. I just want to know the difference between these two funds. Thank you. And how does this one benefit the poor, the 110 million one to 95 projects?
Thanks, Chair. Chair, on page 19, the presenter mentions some challenges
with regard to the compliance with the treasury regulations and I the other sections, which I think maybe it might be the PFMA, I'm not sure. Can the presenter elaborate on those two? Chair, 2 years or so ago, certain provinces had to create NPOs, CBOs, and NGOs where none existed. They had to create these, babysit them until they could work and then do the services that are required. What is the situation now? We have G91 that we are using to assist us to do service delivery and the administration of drugs. What is their state of accountability as of now? Chair, the last one concerns drivers. Do we keep up-to-date check of the drivers that we are funding? Do we really plan for their deployment after graduation? Thank you.
Mumkun?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Page 5, the new child care legislation, and then the children's amendment bill, which it seems to affect us as lawmakers, that people are very much against the bill that we passed at the NDOP. I would like to get your view as the Department of Social Welfare, how you feel about it, because, I mean, people at home or in the home cannot see a child of 12 years being granted a
child. Out of order. Out of order. It's your responsibility to ensure that people accept that out of order. Next question.
If you already support your services, the giving of family support in places where the children the value of the services that are being given by them, the heavy load that is on the social worker. We need to look at how the families themselves are supported. It is possible to look at the families and the people of family and religion support. One finds that what affects your clients actually affects the social workers and then they can be laid out. Number two, social workers also need to be looked after, particularly on the emotional aspect. I don't see any provision for psychologists who are working with social workers. You come to social workers and you find that they need some form of shoulder on which they can rest the relationship. They don't put their head, but they can go like in the then the about the ECG, I think we have mooted on the ECG being started in flexible homes. I would like to kind of see that it's really safe. Don't be something using advanced buildings. Because if one is selling 155 care centers, in the rural areas, it's not a question of the children being together, but the distances that are walked by the living ones here old. And it's not possible to have a center that takes about 155 buildings. So we will still have to use the whatever centers are in the community. So it may be a question of how far the centers are.
Chair, you will roll on this one, Chair. From the Federalist, National Federalist input, it's in case, I think, understand by 29%. Mpumalanga, 22%. Are these the understanding on the court? Yeah. On page two. On page two. But also, Chair, the Mpumalanga on the administration. I understand that 16.7%. I'm sure it's enlightened because it's regarded as low. Are they coping with this kind of administration? But also the last one, Chair, is on page 7 of the the Mpopo is 8-4. This 44 million, is that what they spend on this 8 homes? Because it's in the adults, it is the highest expenditure with the lowest number of what you call homes that is there. Yeah,
if this administration cost that seems to be very high in the Northwest, what are we paying for it yet? Well, it looks like also they've outstripped the kind of average. Do we have some norm and standard as the National Department to deal with this money? Number two, the Mpumalanga is the lowest. Again, what's going on in Mpumalanga? Is there a plan to address that problem, to fit with the average? Now, there is the per capita spending on welfare services. The Mpopo seems to be the lowest all the way from 2003 up to 2010. Now, again, do we have some norms? Are we planning to impose some norms at the level of the min-max? The question that Mr. Sokone raises about services to older persons, again, do we have some norms in respect of the old age home, such that would be able to ensure that there is some form of uniformity? Services to children, again, Limpopo is a vast problem. And yet the sites are about 11. Eastern Cape, the biggest, again, is there some form of norm, again, how do we deal with this matter? What are the implications of this in respect now of the kids as they grow into the learning environment? The ball is in your court.
Again, on page 2, the province that is in the, it says in the ISU, it's no longer in the ICU. It's no longer in the ICU, I mean, I don't know. But on page 2 of the Treasury report, Northwest, could only afford to spend 87%. I think it's a huge underestimation about them. Can they, what you call the terrorists, can we get an explanation as to why? But the last one I'll share, on page 8 to services to children. Is there proper information in terms of how these ECGs should be set up? Because I can understand that the system caters for 3,000 and the rest of the people have got far less than that. But we do know that as we go around your constituencies, there are a lot of these, what they call the centers around. Clearly, they are not registered. Do people know that they are supposed to register? And if they do, why did that take the registration so long? From something I can assure you, that's what I'm thinking. It's just enough for Johannesburg only, without going to other areas. But I think that there is a problem somewhere, whether it's information or what, in terms of how to register.
All right. Just the last one. Do we have a common basket of social services across provinces? So that we've got some gain norm and standard, if you like, in respect of the basket. Deputy Minister, you must share them with your team. All basket of questions belong to you.
Thank you, sir. I will show to the acting DG. So we got the branch, most knowledgeable in terms of responding to all the questions. But I'm sure you also allow the provinces that are in to respond to some of the questions.
Thank you, Honourable Sir. The first question around the victim empowerment program, I'm sure also the provinces would respond in terms of this. Currently, about 99% of the victim empowerment program is done through partnerships with non-governmental organizations. And therefore it means the transfer of funds in terms of victim empowerment. But as you indicate, indeed within the provinces, the staff component.
Just a minute. Essentially, what you're saying is you've outsourced that serious responsibility.
What I mean is, in terms of policy development, of course, at national, it's done at national, but in terms of the services that we're currently providing at the provinces, a higher percentage of that is provided by non-governmental organizations. The provinces currently do not have staff components. In most cases, I'm not sure of that statistic.
This is the issue I'm raising. So in other words, you've decided not to build in-house capacity in the department. You have outsourced to the NGOs. That's the sense of my question.
Currently, yes, the services are provided. There's no capacity within provincial departments to deliver victim empowerment.
Their plan in the MTF to deal with in-house capacity in the long term.
There is a plan to deal in the long term to deal with the capacity within the provinces. Actually, even in terms of looking at that long-term plan, we looking at the budget which we did not have as the sector in terms of strengthening victim empowerment. We were even looking at the funding that was coming from EU, a bulk of money which was aimed at building capacity at provincial level as well as national level in terms of addressing the issue of victim empowerment. Because we have recognized ourselves that there is lack of capacity in the provinces and we need to strengthen that. And the aim was to use the donor funding and going forward to ensure that we we plan in terms of medium term expenditure to bid for that and build capacity in terms of the provinces, because currently there is no capacity. The second question around the transfers to NGOs in terms of how do we monitor measures, I need to indicate that first of all, the NGOs are governed by the Non-Profit Organization Act, which requires a compliance in terms of governance issues, in terms of that. So that's the first part. And actually this links to the question that was raised to say some of the NGOs, actually all NGOs are at different levels. There are those that are still crawling. We still have those NGOs that are still crawling, that really need to be taken by hand, to be assisted in terms of ensuring that they comply with government issues, even to the extent of assisting them in developing the project proposals, assisting them in terms of managing those funds, assisting them in terms of reporting. There are still those NGOs that are at that level. And as I was presenting, I indicated that some of the challenges we find that there's delay in terms of transferring to those NGOs, because one would need to ensure that systems are in place, that there are governance issues that they have complied with before you can transfer to those NGOs. So I agree that the NGOs are at different levels and we are still continually supporting them. Hence, even our priority as the sector is in terms of building capacity of NGOs, because we recognize that you need to continuously build that capacity and continuously monitor them to the extent that there are even the funds that are allocated them, they are spending them in terms of the project proposal. But also it was indicated earlier on that we are even strengthening our monitoring and evaluation mechanism, because also what in the analysis that we did in terms of implementing the NGO Act, we identified the gaps that we were not monitoring and evaluating those 43,000 registered NGOs to the extent that they are supposed to, as indicated in terms of NGO Act. And this is a challenge that we still face as a department, because when you are talking about 43,000 NGOs and the need to monitor governance issues in terms of those 43,000, it's the biggest challenge. We're looking at even strengthening the components that deals with them, the NGO directorate that deals in terms of administering that act. We hope we'll reach that level of really closing those gaps that are there.
Sure, I'd like to just add on that last question. We've just established a chief directorate that deals with entity oversight. And, you know, for the last 2 years since SASA has been established, the focus has been looking at SASA as a service delivery institution. We've also brought India closer into the accountability mechanism. We've just had a discussion on how to bring NGOs, particularly because of that concern, into because their service delivery institution, if the amount of money that is spent through NGOs is an indicator, they warrant the same kind of attention. So we've just commissioned, not commissioned, the in-house staff is going to do that. We're going to look at, not all of them because there's too many at this stage, but we're going to get a sample of issues around governance, capacity, so that we can actually look at how to begin to build governance and capacity. It also brings back to the question around VEP. Now, at the moment, VEP is mostly an after-the-fact activity. We're also beginning to look at to what extent we begin to build preventative measures. And there, for example, the gender-based violence sector, which is mostly NGOs, historically has been very strong, but have been without funds. So one of the strategies is to strengthen that sector again, because they do provide very good support to victims, but they're also very good in terms of prevention. So, you know, the strategic issue is, do we build enough capacity, or do we strengthen the capacity that is actually better to deliver these services than we are? We had a discussion with Treasury in terms of a budget, but around that if we don't begin to support these NGOs, especially around violence against women and children, that capacity will weaken and we'll have to do it ourselves. And we won't be able to do it, given the state of government, given the kind of skills needed to do that. So I think it's a very big strategic issue that we need to consider there.
There was a question around the disparities in terms of the distribution of old age homes. We are currently, after the passing of legislation on older the Older Persons Act, we are currently undertaking research that is looking at the needs of older persons. Because in terms of the legislation, there are institutional services which are provided within the old age homes, but there are also community-based services. And the research that we are currently conducting is going to enable us to assess the current situation in terms of the old age homes and indicate to what extent are the current old age homes enough to provide the services that they are providing. Because we might look at the distribution as a challenge, but find that in actual needs, there's no need for adding more old age homes in those communities, but rather we need to strengthen community-based services. So the research that we're undertaking is going to assist us in terms of that. And as such, for now, there is no norm in terms of old age homes. And we that issue will be dealt with once we get the outcome of that research that we are conducting. There was a question around with regard to the morale and the support that has to be provided to social workers. And once more again, it was indicated that we undertook a study that was looking at the working conditions of social workers. And the outcome of the study that we undertook indicated a number of challenges, and which include the issues that have been raised by the honorable member around the support to social workers. And as we look at the outcome of that study, we are developing various programs that are going to respond to those findings that have come out. And those findings include issues that we have raised around the morale, how do we ensure that whilst the social workers play a critical role in supporting families, they also need as individuals support themselves, particularly because what came out from that study clearly was the fact that they are working under tremendous working conditions, and therefore that also affects their morale. So we're looking at that. NGA, are these the grants, or how does the 110 million benefit the poor? My colleague will respond to that.
So I think that the first category where the money goes directly to NGOs, which is the 110 million, now that bypasses intermediary organizations, which means that the money that goes to those projects is made on the assumption that those organizations have the necessary capacity to deliver so poor projects on their own. We haven't studied this enough to look at the outcomes of that. But the assumption is that they have the necessary capacity. Where it goes to intermediaries, which is your NGO that supports those organizations, that 45 million, there's also been money that is actually passed back down to those projects in terms of support and sometimes also in service delivery support. We need to look at what is best in the end. There's always been an argument that the more money you give to intermediaries, the less money actually gets to communities. And we need to find the right balance there. So we're going to actually have to work with the NDA closer on looking at the outcomes of the various kinds of support given to the two, your primary organization and your secondary organization.
In fact, you need to urgently prioritize that study in view of the fact that the NDA underperformed in the last financial year by 48 million.
And I was also going to say, the report worries the people, because these monies are going to this project. I mean, are going to non-profit organizations. Sometimes people just wake up in the morning and the two of us, I'm not sure if you're saying, for instance, you are establishing your monitoring and evaluation. So I'm really worried around this area, whether the benefits of this article really go to the targeted people or are people just enriching themselves. The question that was raised around this The acting CC didn't really catch this question that was raised around these organizations that are crawling and what. Because we had picked up on our oversight that it seems like the department says, well, here's money. There's a lot of money there. Anybody can go out and catch this fish. So everybody is waking up, forming this organization. But whether these people are really rendering services to the people is another question. And no one is really what you call it, monitoring that service. That's a problem that we have in our
country. Question is, track record on development and service delivery.
I think the point made by the member is important. When it comes to service delivery, when we fund individuals, the department directly, or the provinces to do work that otherwise the department would have had to do themselves, we can build that capacity a lot easier to track that for NME. The challenge comes with the NDA, who would fund NGOs based on their own criteria of funding. And that is why we need to actually do the study, as Vijay pointed out, to look at ultimately the bulk of the money coming to the NDA is basically coming from government itself. We need to look at what is the output of that. So we need to check in terms of governance, for example. Are those the kind of organizations that really make a difference? Or is it basically the kind of institution that are set up to apply for funds, given that there's a market for funds in that arena? Now, at this stage, we haven't been able to do that yet, but we will be doing that quite soon.
The honourable member raised a question on ECD centres and the number that I gave with regard. I said there are so many ECD centres and there are so many children accessing them. And I said, looking at that, at the number of registered early childhood development centres, therefore it means there is one centre per 400 children. But it doesn't mean each centre has to accommodate 455. And I added on to say that to us, that is an indication in social development that if, on average, we've got one ECD center for 455, it indicates the challenge that we need to accelerate the registration of ECD centers because we need to reduce that that ratio. We need to reduce that. But also, and hence we have, I think last week you heard when we engaged in a campaign where we are looking at accelerating registration of ECD centers. But also your question around can't you use just ordinary houses as ECD centers. I need to indicate that they are not the standards in terms of the infrastructure that is required for ECD centers, and there's a need to comply in terms of those. The question on how do we keep trends in terms of the students that are getting bursaries for us and whether we have a plan for their deployment. Indeed, we keep trends in terms of that. We are working closely, national is working closely with the provincial departments in terms of ensuring that we get progress reports of these students as they continue with their university work. But also, we have a forum where we also meet with the universities themselves in terms of even planning, not just the intake, but to say how are we going to ensure that when these students come at, for example, when they finish their year 11, they have to do practicals. How do we plan for that beforehand? And when they finish their four-year degree, definitely because of part of the contract that they signed in terms of getting the bursary is that they have to practice at least for so many years within the social development. And therefore, that ensures that we need to make sure that when they finish their four-year degree, they have places where they need to be absorbed, because we cannot have that contract if we don't make sure that we plan properly to absorb those students. The challenge I need to say is that we have indicated in our presentation that we have social workers in government and we have social workers who are in the NGOs, and we are recognizing as government that those NGOs, they are a critical partner in terms of delivering services. And the challenge now is how are we as government, how do we assist those NGOs to the extent that we build capacity of social workers within those NGOs, and we don't look at ourselves as government only once we require their services. That's the challenge, and those are the issues that we are discussing as the department.
I'll ask my colleague to respond on the question on page 19 of the governance.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mr. Snyman, acting Chief Financial Officer of the National Department. Chairperson, in terms of the governance matters, I think the acting DG did raise the matter as well as the COO. It's basically that that is where the delays in transferring of funds come about. Before we actually can make transfers to identified NGOs to deliver service delivery, we actually need to ensure that they do have a proper right governance structures as well as financial systems in place, after which we have then received their proposals or the business plans, which we actively go and evaluate before we provide funding to the NGOs. So that is where the delays in transferring of money come from, but that is also the basis for accountability. So that approved business plan will then become the accountability instrument to monitor the service delivery in terms of that funds that have been provided for.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Before getting into the meat of the discussion, allow me, Chairperson, just to mention that the Department of Social Development, as it is today, about 24 or so months ago, by the time when we had the SASA, the decision being taken that SASA will be formed, the component that is left had not clear service delivery model or platform, no HR, and could not even say as to what the requirement of infrastructure it had. Now, if one looks at where we are today, we can say that we have been able to advance to some extent, because we have got what we call the new service delivery model, which guides us as the Department of Social Development. And we have been able to establish the baselines in terms of our HR needs. And we are still having very serious challenges in providing infrastructure. As we have been able to, when as a department we made an audit of the conditions of the social workers, it became very clear that we do not have the necessary infrastructure to deliver the services as a department. Now, by infrastructure, I don't talk about only the bricks and mortar. I talk about bricks and mortar, the necessary equipment, information technology, furniture, organizational development, the monitoring and evaluation the systems, and the quality assurance that form the core of the infrastructure that we need to be able to deliver services. There are a number of questions that the National Treasury has raised, and some of those questions that have been raised by honorable members of this House were directed to Mpumalanga. If one goes to page 2 and looks at the amount that we did surrender as we went to adjustment budget, which is about 95 million, it was not an indication that we did not have the services to deliver. But as a social development component of the Department of Health and Social Services, we realized that it was not going to be possible for us to spend that amount of money, mainly because we had not foreseen the challenges that we would have as a result of us trying to implement the new service delivery in the province, because of the areas that the acting DG has put on the table for you to understand. The question that has been asked about the 15% administration, I think it might be best wise to say
Because at this point, we cannot say that that is the ideal or not the ideal, but it's not the average. It might be best for us to be able to give the details, maybe in writing, to say why is it at that level. But if one were to compare the expenditure by the public sector and the private sector, and say what percentage should be going to administration, most money should be going to service delivery, and the least going to administration. There might be...
Not this one. This one is more labor intensive. You should be paying social worker. But it's an interesting norm. If you're ready, raising that.
I was just mentioning it, Honorable Chairperson, to say that I would not like to hazard a guess at this point, but I would like us to give you a plausible explanation as to whether that is adequate and as to whether that might be, in fact, even be ideal. But I would say that we have at the time been like we have mentioned that, for example, one of the problems that we had was as a result of us not having been able to finalize the organizational structure, and also as a result of the shortage of necessary personnel, we had spent less, especially with the compensation of employees. There was a question that was asked.
We're in Mpumalanga now, as far as this is concerned.
Yes, before that, you see, the problem is that they have surrendered 95 million, but still underspent.
Honorable Chairperson, we, from the sub-complement of 514 in the beginning of the financial year 2006 and 2007, by the end of the financial year, we were at about 904. At this point, we can say that we have doubled the sub-complement of social development. But even if we have doubled that sub-complement, we have to be able to say, to make an analysis of which appointments have we made. Have we made them in management, or have we made it them at the level of service delivery at the district level? And we also have to be able to say, the question that we have been debating amongst ourselves is that if at this point we have been able to double the sub-complement of the department, what does that translate into in terms of output and outcome? Now, we do not as yet have the answer.
The problem is that if you look on the same basis, whilst your focus is social rights services, 2.9%, you've spent that amount in terms of your administration. How do you account for that?
I didn't quite clearly get the question.
In terms of your focus, in terms of that program spending, the social welfare services, which is 52.9%, vis-a-vis the spending. In other words, is this spending commensurate to the services that are rendered by whoever?
The services are commensurate expenditures commensurate to the services. In fact, the bulk of the budget is carried under social welfare, honorable chairperson. The question on the VEP centers, just to add to what the acting DG has said, there are 5 VEP centers in the province. But we would not necessarily say that is adequate. We have been having discussions with the Department of Safety and Security, especially on matters of social crime, because we are of the opinion that as a province, we can be able to increase service delivery in that area. The question on the state of accountability of the NGOs, I think that it has been covered, but we have intensified efforts to make sure that we can be able to account for the funds that we are transferring to the NGOs.
Just to add on the issue of transfer, yes, there are problems that are around the legal challenges that we are having, and even sometimes even the difficulty of NGOs to comply or even to submit on time. But on the other side, we have realized in the province that one of the problems that we have is that we have been used to a situation where sometimes that where transfers have been made late. So in terms of planning, we have taken a decision to say that we have to transfer the funds to NGOs in the first week of the first quarter when the transfer has got to take place. An example here would be that the transfer in the financial year, the first transfer, would be on the first Wednesday of the first month of the year, which means that there must be a lot of work that is done in the previous financial year to make money available in the very beginning of the first quarter for the non-governmental organizations and the organizations that are delivering service to be able to deliver that service. Of course, making sure that they will still comply with the law as we go into the financial year. The issue of the ECD centers. The work that we are doing as a department throughout the country, it is also being done within the context of the apex of priorities that has been adopted by the cabinet, the national cabinet. And the figures that we are having here, as we have gone out now on the very serious campaign to register ECD, the chances are that the figures that we are seeing here for all the provinces are going to change and change drastically. My apologies, Chairperson. But with Mpumalanga, what we have done is that we have issued the advertisement for the registration of ECDs. And we have also decided that we have got to come with a second batch of advertisements that will be in local languages, because the people in our villages do not know anything about ECD. They know Kreshi. So we must be able to get them in Chang'an, for example, to say registrar, makrejagai. So that's what we have decided that we have got to do, so as to be able to not to target only those ones that are in town, but also those ones that will understand the language where they are staying. The last thing that I wanted to just touch on, that honourable member had talked about on the issue of the distribution of homes. The question that arose in my mind as this discussion was taking place, I was just asking myself as to how do our laws and policies align to our life experiences? And do they talk to the dominant culture? If we are saying that we have more old age homes in the West...
No, Baba, you've got to implement these laws now. The idea, that's the reality. It's not about a discussion. Implement the law, come back to us and say these laws have unintended consequences. In fact, at midnight you can discuss that. For now, we don't want that response. We want the reality now in terms of your province.
It's not the honorable chairperson. I thought aloud. Thank you very much.
I'm told the Eastern Cape is here. Okay, they're not here. There are people that are agitated for lunch, but let the department finish off. What's up? Arajele? Let me, Danny. Huh? KZN? Uh-huh. All right. Hey, sir. Yeah, man. Does not want to speak. Are you fine? Because you don't want to tamper with lunch.
All right, let's hear the last words from the National Department. The last words from the National Department then. Well, Eastern Cape, that lady is not from the Eastern Cape. She is from the Eastern Cape on a different matter. Yes. She's not representing the Provincial Department.
Thanks, Chair. There's a couple of questions that I think that would be appropriate in closing that was raised by yourself in particular. The one is that we haven't developed a clear basket of services, which is one thing that we need to do. And it's part of what the innovative project that I spoke about, so that we have a sense of what we can do collectively. And the second one, I think my colleague from Mpumalanga was beginning to raise an issue that we need to discuss, is what will be appropriate norms and standards in terms of admin versus service delivery. That discussion hasn't taken place, and I think the question will brought us into further discussion in the sector.
Chair, I think that everything that I've seen is what we have to take into account is that welfare services until very recently have occupied a very small percentage of the total budget of the Department of Social Development. And we also have to take into account the unintended consequences of moving SASA out. The positive is that we have now nothing else to occupy ourselves with in the provinces than to deliver on social welfare services, but there is a severe backlog. And I think if one looks across at the improvement, then I think we're not doing so badly.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I must say that you've been very, very visible this week as a department. The Minister was with the other units the other day reporting on the outcome of the investigations. I also saw him again on TV yesterday. I'm saying the department is very much active this week. I think what I want to request really is for the National Department. Okay, that's fine. Okay. So I'm saying, can we request then the National Department to investigate together with the two provinces this trend, in other words, Mpumalanga trend, that 15% on administration, but then also Northwest, just together with them. But secondly, these issues that are raised, the social welfare services vis-a-vis development and research, for instance, and the development trust of the department. I think it's a matter that we must assist provinces to deal with. Otherwise, if we don't, we're going to have a big headache in that respect. Having said that, but I also know that I did raise one thing with your COO when I was part of your panel, when we were interviewing the board. One of my concerns is the fact that you still do not have a national policy on poverty eradication as a country. That is a matter that must be prioritized. But two, what I was saying to them is the fact that as you engage in the context of poverty eradication, you seem to have many pockets of those things. EPWPs, etc., many pockets. Finally, we need some coordinating center somewhere. But then the other problem that these structures are also not speaking to each other. NDA does not speak to DBSA, IDT, etc. But then lastly is the issue that we think, that's my view again, especially because you are giving this money to NGOs who must do service delivery. I suspect that this is not done in line with IDPs. And I think it's a problem. That if you want delivery, it must always be done in the context of the IDPs. And so, I mean, there's always a tension between NGOs, CBOs, and councillors, for instance. And so, when people are doing IDPs, these people would be having their own pockets that they know where for. What is money from? Social Development, NGA. And so I'm going to do my own projects here and there and so on and so on. I'm just saying, I suspect there might be some problems there. We might want to talk more about those. Now, having said that, can we send the deputy minister and the team and everybody who has contributed? So far, we'll be dealing with education at 2:15. Can you go for lunch with the whole of everybody? Everybody invited. Team minister, deputy minister.